Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM. Let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing horrendous investing advice. Hot dogs and ADUs. FTW for the win.
Nice pronunciation on the hot dog. You said the hot part right. You didn't say the dog part right. But
I'm very cultured.
We are going to get to that story, a pet's story. We don't talk about pets enough here on the show, even though you've got a couple cats still. Yeah. I don't have any pets.
So the other day, we came back from our little mountain visit last weekend, Emily and I.
Have they escaped?
One of the cats
really
was not escaped, okay. Was in the crawl space, and she had found this one random spot and she couldn't get out. And so she was in there probably for like 36 hours or something like
shut
that.
Shut up.
And
wait,
she's so fine. All's fine.
From your main space, she found her way in through
into the crawl space.
How the heck?
Well, I think Emily accidentally didn't lock the door, and so they can pry anything open if it's not completely locked shut.
So you got home, and there's a bunch of meow.
Yeah. So we're going to offer animal money advice, even though I'm probably not the best person to take it from.
You're not the best cat dad out there. By the way, real quick, I wanted to share. So I just had a meeting this morning, a meeting that was maybe like 15, 20 minutes away. I told Kate yesterday, and she's like, sorry, I'm tied up all day. I need the van. And so because we are a one-car family, what that meant was that for a simple task, something, all the time, you run around, you run errands, you just hop in the car and you go. You don't think about it. But in this case, this meant that I needed to hail a ride-sharing service. And there's two reasons I wanted to bring this up. First of all, I look back at my history of how often I have used, in this case, Uber. And I hadn't used it at all this year. And so I wanted to share that because oftentimes folks are like, well, how do you get around? Like if your wife needs to be somewhere and you need to be somewhere as well. Well, that doesn't happen as often as you might think. And we had included room in our budget to handle these kind of expenses. But the reality is for us, it doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've designed our life to where I can ride my bike to most places I need to go on a daily basis. Being a one-car family is not as bad as you might think. And B, another tip as well, always make sure that you check between both apps or whatever apps you have, wherever it is that you live. Because I pulled it up on Uber, it was something like 15, 16 bucks. Pulled it up on Lyft, Dude, it was $32, $33 for the exact same ride.
Double the price, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's
like
crazy.
You never know which one's going to be cheaper. And so you got to look at both.
It just depends, I guess, on whoever. It makes me think of like online banks, because folks are always like, oh, should I switch just to get a slightly higher rate? And it's like, well, for a slightly higher percentage, it's kind of a big deal just to optimize in that small, slight way. And the thing is there's no guarantee that you will continue to get the best rate, right? Whereas when you book a ride, it's like, I know that this is going to be half the expense as the other one. So obviously, you most definitely want to shop it around, and it's worth checking.
Yeah, just be logged into both apps and check them both before you need a ride somewhere, because the differences can be stark in the cost of that ride, and you can save a boatload of money. I feel like I found that more. You would think that they would just be a buck or two off, that these apps would be a little more in sync with each other when it comes to the cost that you're paying. I don't know why I think that, but
because of efficient markets.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's why. You would think that, okay, if Lyft is showing that it's going to be way more expensive, you would think that more drivers, I guess, would sign up or would switch over, because a lot of them drive for both of the different apps.
That they go get paid more over there.
Hop on over because there's more of a demand there. But
and that it would even out pretty quickly. But the reality is, for some reason, the price disparity can still be stark.
It's really interesting.
And so you got to shop every single time you're getting a ride.
Which is fine. You just kind of, bounce.
Takes no time.
The apps that make it easy.
But you can save big money. So.
Yeah, so definitely check both. And again, I just wanted to share that, though, because, man, it is, I think being a one-car family, it is way more doable than a lot of people think. In particular, if one of you has a very predictable commute, very predictable, you know, for me to come in here, like, you know, you ride your bike over as well. We just talked about bikes actually earlier this week.
Yeah. Well, and as we've said before too, with more and more people working from home than ever before, or hybrid working, like
something
not having to go into the office as much,
need to consider,
it's
man.
More doable than it was even 5 years ago, right? To become a one car family, even if you're a family of four or five, like
totally.
it's easier now than it's ever been. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to our Friday flight. A
let's
sampling of
do
stories
it.
We found interesting this week. There's a lot to talk about. We will get to inflation as well, because we got those numbers just yesterday. And, you know, we've talked about our love for ADUs, Matt, or accessory dwelling units, since the inception of this podcast. Let's maybe start with a story on that front.
Yeah. Literally, it was, I think, like episode 2 or 3 that we talked about. In your case, you're thinking about getting an Airstream
in the backyard.
I was
right.
thinking about finishing out the basement, which we actually did end up doing. Renting it out on Airbnb until we took it over, because that's where we used to record.
So we have always
pour one out for the old basement.
That's right. We have always loved that idea, though, that it can be a great way to get into the rental property game. But the truth is, ADUs are becoming more popular all around the country as more municipalities, more cities are legalizing the building of these things. And so The Atlantic had a great article about this phenomenon just the other day. Apparently, more than 60,000 ADUs have been built in California since the law was changed there just 6 years ago. And as we all know, housing costs more these days. Whether you're renting or buying, that's actually part of why the inflation numbers are still so high, is it the cost of housing remains pretty expensive. And even though we're starting to see more price cuts for buyers and for renters out there, there's still just like this massive lack of housing supply, which is going to prevent prices from falling as much as a lot of folks would like to see.
Right.
And what's the answer to the problem of more expensive housing? Well, when we're talking basic economics, the short, simplest answer is creating more supply and making ADUs legal in more places across the country and easier to permit at the same time, as it is at least one of those ways in which we'll be able to stabilize prices, I would say, for future home buyers and renters. I'm glad to see more people in California adopting, jumping on the ADU bandwagon, and I hope this just becomes more commonplace in the years to come.
Yeah, dude, I want to reiterate that. 60,000 new residences for folks who are looking to get their own place.
That's meaningful, like, additional
that is
supply.
A serious number of new housing units. And even though I think there can be a criticism of them, though, because oftentimes they do tend to be a little bit smaller. But there's a ripple effect, right? Because you got somebody who's looking to get into their first place, or somebody who's looking to downsize or something like that. Well, that then frees up another unit that they would have otherwise considered, maybe a one-bedroom or two-bedroom, right? Or like an apartment, or even a small house, that then that unit is now available for the next family.
And well, and there have been a lot of documentation recently of the lack of starter homes available, like smaller sub 1400 foot square foot homes. And so because of that, like it's true that the homes that are being built are typically larger. And so ADUs are typically smaller, filling a void, I think, that does exist.
Yeah, I just love that. In theory, at least, there's this ripple effect, and hopefully that will at least keep housing prices in check. And I think the best line from that article was that, in short, merely legalizing ADUs triggered a boom in affordable housing at no cost to the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. Man, just a slam dunk decision, in our opinion, because increasing density, that means building more units for people to live and creating more supply. That is going to go a long way towards increasing affordability. And, you know, kind of like you teased to just a second ago, Joel, the other cool thing about ADUs, not from a rental standpoint, but from a landlording standpoint, is that they can be a great way to get your feet wet as a real estate investor. And so if you don't feel like you're ready to buy an additional single family home or even a multifamily to rent out to prospective tenants, well, building a unit in your own backyard, that could be the perfect fit and a potentially profitable endeavor as well. You just need to make sure you run the numbers. You need to know what it's going to cost to build, what you'll be able to rent it for, and obviously whether or not it's actually legal.
Yeah, and you have to be able to increase your cash flow every single month. An ADU can be a great way to do that, can get you into the real estate game. Well, speaking of real estate, Matt, let's talk about house flipping for a second, because that is, of course, one of the riskier ways to make money in the housing market. But yeah, and whether or not you make money in that business often has to do not just with how good you are at doing it, but what's happening in the market as a whole, because it is a shorter term endeavor. The market conditions have a major impact on whether or not you make money. And it wasn't nearly as difficult to look like a genius home flipper in 2020 and 2021. But it's much harder to do the same thing in 2022 as the market kind of stalls out in a big way. And iBuying service Opendoor, they found that out the hard way. They recently announced that they lost money on 42% of the homes they listed for resale in August.
That's quite the hit.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to remain profitable or be profitable at all
if this continues.
Mm-hmm. And whether or not these tech-first real estate companies are going to be successful in the long run is anyone's guess. But what I took away from seeing these numbers is that we've entered a really tricky time when it comes to making money in real estate. You know, a lot of individual flippers are finding themselves in a game of like musical chairs where they're kind of the ones left standing. They're left holding the bag if they bought the house, they put a lot of money in, hoping that the wind would continue to be at their back. But as home prices are moderating or even declining in some areas, they're finding themselves in a tricky position.
Yep.
And the least risky way, we would say, to pursue real estate investing is to think long term. The stakes are high if you're trying to make money quickly via a strategy of flipping. You could lose a big pile of money. And I think we've always tried to temper people's enthusiasm when it comes to flipping houses.
Totally.
Because, yeah, you can do well investing in that way, but there's a whole lot more risk at the same time.
There's a whole lot more risk. And obviously, with more risk, oftentimes comes more reward. But you have to plan for that additional risk, right? That needs to be built into your calculations. You can't just assume, like you said, that the wind is always going to be at your back. And if the winds shift just a little bit, that you're totally up the creek without a paddle. We need more margin in our lives. And I think oftentimes, like what you see are business, not just businesses, but individuals trying to optimize their lives to where every single dollar, where they're squeezing as much value as they possibly can from it. But what we sometimes need is a little bit more margin. And so, when it comes to our personal finances, you might be hearing this and you're like, well, I'm not going to flip a house. Well, what that means, though, with your savings account and your checking account is having a little bit more cash set aside to absorb some of those shocks.
Yeah.
And a big reason that we're seeing turmoil, you know, in what was this red hot housing market is, of course, the soaring mortgage rates that everyone's been seeing tick up. They've skyrocketed north of 7% at this point, which is a far cry from the 3% rates folks were seeing just a year ago.
I have a friend, by the way, who has a 15-year mortgage that's under 2%. And I'm just like, you're awesome. Congratulations. You win.
And also, don't pay that one off early.
Ever.
These massively increased costs of borrowing, like they will shift a market pretty quickly. And although this might be helpful for perspective, we're still a ways off from what listener Lilium shared in our Facebook group. Her 30-year mortgage rate in 1985 was just shy of 12%. Could you imagine paying 12%?
No.
A 12% mortgage. There's another listener as well, Glenn. He mentioned that he had a mortgage rate of 15.5%, dude. This is back in 1981, not surprisingly. But we wanted to mention this because mortgage rates are having a significant impact on what it is that folks could afford, right? So a year ago, if you had a 3% mortgage, let's say you could afford a $3,000 monthly payment, that means that you could have had a loan out on a property that was in the $750,000 range. Today, if you are getting a new mortgage at 7% and you are still basically limiting yourself to that same $3,000 payment a month, that means you can only afford a home with a $450,000 loan. Yeah. So that there's a massive difference in the type of property and what it is that you can spend these days.
Yeah, and I got to say, by the way, we don't expect mortgage rates to stay in this stratosphere forever. We do think they'll go down, but it's who knows how long it's going to be. It could be 2 years until we see mortgage rates back down anywhere close to where they were. And and so you
could be 20 years. Like, I mean,
it could be.
It's unlikely. Fingers crossed. Holy crap. Like, that'd be insane, but you never know.
Yeah. And so you can't plan on refinancing a short 12 months and lowering your rate by a couple points.
Yep.
You have to be able to afford that mortgage in the meantime if you're going to buy a house. Well, Matt, let's talk about inflation for a second, because the CPI numbers came out just yesterday morning. They weren't good. Inflation is still a major problem, and food and housing costs being kind of those main culprits. So we're going to see Fed rate hikes continue in all likelihood.
That's right.
Talked about that, last week on the show?
A couple weeks ago.
And how
there goes my whole theory. I was thinking that the Fed might slow down a little bit, but based on the recent inflation
doesn't look
numbers,
like it.
I was thinking...
Although there are a lot of people out there crying uncle, especially people, the stock market investor types, who they don't want to see any more pain, but...
writing open letters and whatnot.
we're likely to see more of it, right?
Yeah. I'm not expecting a 0.5% increase. I'm sure it'll be the 0.75% increase.
That'd be my guess too. Well, the best medium-term savings solution to combat inflation in all of our lives is still I-bonds. They pay higher rates than anything else you can find in the market right now. But even though inflation is still high, those rates are actually about to go down just a little bit, which means that I-bonds aren't going to be quite as good of a deal as they have been.
That's right. Yeah, the current rate is 9.62%. But that's going to reset on November 1st. And so the way it works is that the rate, it shifts every 6 months based on the CPI. And so that rate, it's likely to shift downward to around 6.5%. And so the takeaway here, like, you might be wondering, like, does this mean it's time to, you know, is it time to give up buying I-bonds? Well, you know, like, they are not for everyone. We think that they do make the most sense for folks who have some medium-term savings goals. But what this does mean is that if you're interested in buying I-bonds, that you should do this before the rate changes on November 1st. Because what that means is you'll get that 9.62% for a full 6 months, even if you buy at the very tail end, as long as you get that purchase in before the cutoff. And so we'll link to the Fed website where you can buy those I-bonds. And, you know, keep in mind, there's a reason that we're not dumping all of our money into the I-bonds, because there's a cap
we can't.
$10,000 a year per person. Although there is a bill that's been introduced attempting to raise that limit to $30,000 in some instances. And if that does happen, if that actually passes, we'll definitely keep you informed.
For sure. And by the way, the treasurydirect.gov, Matt, just got a facelift. At least the front landing page.
Oh, no way.
It doesn't look like a complete disaster zone anymore, which is good. So I think the back end it's still kind of Microsoft DOS-y looking. It's pretty horrendous. Hard to log in, all that stuff. And just generally abysmal web design. But the front page, at least, looks kind of snazzy.
Nice.
Yeah, good on the feds for...
I haven't personally been there since that earlier this year.
Yeah, I know.
Check it out.
I bought mine in December. Literally, I was looking back. December 31st and January 3rd.
Yeah.
I bought I-bonds, maxing out my allotment.
It was a good time to buy.
It was a good time to buy. But people can still get the 9.62. And then if it's 6.5, that blended interest rate is going to be pretty strong for medium-term savings. It's still
7 to 8% range.
Yeah, still a good place to turn, even though it's not
annually
quite as attractive as it was.
Totally.
Well,
add that to your to-do list, though, before you reach the end of the month.
That's right.
Before Halloween, make sure you buy I-bonds. If you've been thinking, this is something I need to do, knock it out, make it happen.
For sure. All right, let's get to a few more headlines and how they apply to your finances. We've got more stories to get to, including one about politics and money. We usually try to avoid politics, but we feel compelled to talk about it, at least for a little bit. We'll get to that and more right after this.
Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop. Mm-hmm. They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
Matt, I love hearing from How to Money listeners who are pumped about a major accomplishment, right? Paying off debt, maxing out a retirement account contribution, or paying cash for a car. Like, those are all killer achievements. Those ecstatic emails, they get me stoked. And maybe a little less flashy, but still a crucial accomplishment, is creating a will. And Trusted Will rocks for that task. The things that people build their futures around are things worth protecting. Making an estate plan now means gaining security of your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones.
That's right. And with Trust and Will, you can create and manage a custom estate plan starting at just $199. Go to trustandwill.com/howtomoney for 10% off plus free document shipping. Keep your family prepared and protected by managing your will or trust online. And each will or trust is state specific and customized to your needs.
Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Get 10% off plus free shipping of your estate plan documents by visiting trustandwill.com/howtomoney. That's 10% off and free shipping at trustandwill.com/howtomoney. Did you know that money issues are a leading cause of divorce? Monarch, the top-rated personal finance app, also has built-in collaboration features so that you can invite your partner at no extra cost. Together, you can see all your finances, you can collaborate on your budget, and you can get insights into your cash flow and recurring transactions. Emily and I, we've been using Monarch together. It's been a great way to get on the same page with money together. We're able to log in and see our real-time financial stats whenever we want, including a current net worth number, which is a great way to track overall progress.
That's a ton of fun too. Yeah, Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app, and it gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets, track progress towards financial goals, and collaborate with your partner, like Joel just mentioned. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. Unlike other personal finance apps out there, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up and to get budgeting. And it's really customizable as well. I'm a big fan of being able to set up automatic rules for different transactions.
After trying out Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial.
All right, man, we're back. We're going to tackle the second half now of our Friday flight. And before we get to that money and politics story, And not the campaign finance reform type of story, but a similar kind of deal.
How much should your personal politics influence what you do with your money?
We're going to get to that. How that should affect your portfolio. Before we get to that, we've got our ludicrous headline of the week. And this creative, fun headline comes from the LA Times, and it reads, "Hot dog," they had it in parentheses, "cuisine. San Francisco offers $75 tasting menu for canines." And, you know,
the kitties feel left out over here, Matt.
Hey, kitties already have their, like, what, the kitty cafes where you sit there and you drink your coffee and the cats get to, like, hang out or whatever.
That's where you go to, like, adopt them, though, I think. And you drink coffee, yeah.
Oh, well, it's not for the cats. I've never been. You're the cat owner.
No, but here.
This place is for dogs.
And they have Doguchinos.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, we don't want to hate on pet owners out there. Joel, like, you and I, we both had dogs in the past. And while we had our dogs, we weren't feeding them, like, the cheapest crap food that existed. But we certainly weren't taking them to fancy schmancy restaurants either. Folks are dropping a lot of money on their dogs to go out to eat. And it also makes sense that this expensive dog eatery, Dogue, that it launched out in San Francisco. You say it like Vogue.
Yeah.
Like Vogue, Megan, this Dogue. Uh-huh. Okay. And the clientele for a place like this, you know, they're likely going to live in a wealthier urban city. But hopefully this does not become a trend, because like you said, Doguchinos, like, these things start at $5 a pop here. And you can even splurge for a $75 three-course meal for your pooch, if you like. Joel, that's like more than what Kate and I spend when we go out.
Yeah.
On a date night. And there's two of us. And we're humans,
by
the way.
I'm expecting at least a five-course menu for $75.
Yeah.
Please, come on.
But on the other hand, what this makes me think is, because you think, well, dogs can't tell. Like, animals can't tell what they're eating. They're just, you know, my dog eats poop. Like, he sees, like, cat poop on the sidewalk and just, like, chows down on that.
Their own vomit sometimes, yeah.
But it does make me think of, did you remember the story of the penguins out in Japan? And the cost of fish was going through the roof. And so the zoo, they switched to a more affordable fish.
Oh, yeah.
And the penguins basically went on a hunger strike. Like, they stopped eating because they were like, no. I want the good stuff. Give me the good fish. And so animals, I mean, they can tell, but hopefully. And so I say that because I don't want, like, I'm not going to yuck on your yum. If you've got a dog and you want to go do this maybe once, like maybe once a year for like their birthday or something like that, you want to go buy them a little special treat and take a picture, throw it up on the gram, then I think that's fine. But hopefully this does not become normal. You know, like we're not trying to normalize this. This is sort of like a special occasion. And if spending a lot of money on your dog is your craft beer equivalent, that I can be okay with.
Yeah, I think the thing is, just we as individuals, we don't want to get accustomed to living too highfalutin of a life, at spending too much money on things, getting accustomed. You're right. Like, we start to get accustomed to things pretty quickly. And it sounds like animals do too, right? They start to get used to a certain sort of diet, yeah, a certain sort of taste. And then you try to cut back, save a little bit of money. And they're like, nah, not so fast. You got me used to the high life now. And you better start, continue to splurge, mm-hmm, for the good food or for the fancy restaurant or whatever it is. Like, we all, it's like that hedonic adaptation that happens to all of us, that scientific term where we just quickly get used to those nicer things and we feel deprived once they're cut out of our lives. And so I think, yeah, you're right. If this is a once a year splurge, that's okay. If this is a regular occurrence, if you're treating your dog to fancy treats, like, they're going to get used to it and they're going to be pissed when you stop feeding them the fancy three-course, you know, ridiculously expensive meals.
That's right. We're not the only ones susceptible to that lifestyle creep.
Yes.
Pets are too.
Pets are too. So, all right. Let's get to talking about investing for a second, Matt, because listener Derek, he sent us this article, which came from MarketWatch. And I'm going to read the headline of this one because it reads, "Young people shouldn't save for retirement." And
yeah,
this definitely caught our attention because it goes against everything that we've been saying for years, Matt. If this is true, maybe it's time for us to, like, hang up our microphones and quit podcasting.
We done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Before we call it quits, let's maybe dive a little bit deeper into this story, because to top it off, by the way, this comes from research done by Nobel Prize winning economists. You and I, we've never been up for a Nobel Prize. We likely never will be. I can't imagine what circumstances it would take.
You speak for yourself.
Maybe you will be. But let's get to the rub of this theory. Basically, some economists think that folks should strive for a consistent standard of living throughout their lives. That's how they put it.
Mm-hmm.
And that involves, and here's their economic term for it, smoothing out your consumption. That will, of course, mean taking on more debt when you're younger and waiting to invest until you're closer to your peak earning years. And so what they're trying to say is that folks who are earlier on in their lives, they shouldn't be quite as focused on the future, because it won't be too long before the higher earning years come around and they can increase their savings at that point.
Yeah, worry about it tomorrow.
Exactly.
Just hit the snooze button on saving and investing.
Right. Of course, we're not fans of that. And yes, even though these are Nobel winning economists here, we remain unconvinced.
Yeah, I mean, a part of their argument, right, was that, hey, $1,000 to somebody who's broke or who's just, you know, like at their first job, like that's a lot of money. But if you're making 100, 200 G's, what's $1,000? That's nothing. I mean, yes, I agree. I'm not going to argue that point. But when it comes to saving for retirement, especially with like work sponsored retirement accounts, we're talking about percentages, right? And so for somebody who's like making $35,000, $40,000 a year, like even if you can get them investing 1% of their income, we're only talking about $350 or $400 a year. That is not, that's a sign-up bonus with a credit card. Like, that is not that much money. But on the other hand, you know, like, I see what they're getting at, because if you front load the sacrifice too much, where you're eating rice and beans every single night because you are attempting to invest like over 30% of your income or something on a small post-college salary, like, that is going to be a tough way to live. But it's also true that the longer you wait to invest, the more that you're going to need to set aside with every future paycheck that you receive. Whereas the earlier you begin, the easier it's going to be to get that wealth snowball rolling downhill. And Jim Dolly, he's got a fantastic site, the White Coat Investor. Not surprisingly, he writes to physicians, folks who are in the medical industry, doctors. But he tells his readers to live like a resident even when they become attending physicians. A lot of times you can fall into that mindset. It's lifestyle creep, basically, right? Like, you think, oh, now that I'm a doctor, I'm going to go ahead and get that BMW, whatever it is. You're going to drop the big money on the things that you feel like are associated with being a legit doctor.
The paycheck shoots up and so does your lifestyle instantaneously.
But what about all those student loans? What about all that debt that you've got? And so to maintain that resident lifestyle, we think that's great advice because there's a difference between living so frugally that life is pleasureless, and the truth, though, that you can positively impact your financial future by prioritizing future you, even when you're young and even when your income is smaller. There's also just the fact that you're building habits all along the way to make that easier down the road as well. So just keep that in mind. There's always trade-offs in life, but it truly doesn't have to be an either or scenario. We think that if you just take this approach, you know, too far, like, it can be too much of a gamble. Basically, you're just rolling the dice, counting on, you know, a higher income and the ability to invest more way down the road when you could at least be getting started right now.
Yeah, this is one of those things that makes sense in an economic paper, in a white paper. It sounds good when economists are yakking it up or something at some fancy university, but when it comes to the reality of everyday life, we're not guaranteed massive incomes in our middle earning years. And like, I look back to my parents. Matt, my dad lost his middle management job right when we were about my kid's age. And
right when maybe somebody in his position would have expected to start hitting some of those higher paying years.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's tough.
And so it would have been great if he had been saving more and investing more in those early years instead of, people kept telling him, well, you're going to earn more. Of course you're going to earn more down the road. Like, buy that bigger house. Like, it's okay. Well, and that is the kind of advice that these economists might say, like, smooth out your consumption, but you're not promised that higher paying job tomorrow. Yeah. And so,
and that's only looking at the income side of things as well, right? Because they're also assuming that, like, what they're saying is to peg your consumption, peg your expenses at a fixed amount and just stick with that the whole rest of your life. Well, that's not how people behave, right? I mean, like,
and expenses do go up the older you get.
Expenses go up, and we're not robots. It's difficult, I think, for anybody out there from a realistic standpoint to say, okay, I'm going to immediately start living this kind of lifestyle and then just maintain that. No, like, somebody who's used to a certain kind of lifestyle, they're definitely not going to scale back, but you're also discounting the ability for some of that lifestyle creep to, you know, to start finding their way into their personal finances where it's affecting their budget.
Yeah, and one last thing that goes against, I would say, this philosophy of consumption smoothing is that if you're not supposed to be investing very much for retirement in those early years, oftentimes you're going to be missing out on free money, that match from your employer. You're losing out on free money that's helping you save for your future.
Yep.
And if you do that for too many years, that's going to have detrimental long-term effects too.
Yeah, you're missing out on that multiplier, man.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about politics here for a second, Matt. It is something we try to stay away from as much as possible on this show. There are certainly just political maneuvers that we have to cover that impact our finances, but midterm elections are right around the corner. We thought it might be a good time to mention that it's important to keep your politics separate from how you handle your money. At Barry Ritholtz, we really like his blog. He wrote this week about the YAWL ETF, which, by the way, why has this got to be associated with the best word in the world? Us Southerners, we use the word YAWL, understandably so, because it's the best way to address a group of people. But this YAWL ETF just launched, which, and it's attempting to screen out more left-leaning companies, investing in businesses that align with more conservative beliefs. Well, here's the question. What sort of fee do they charge for you to be able to invest according to your political beliefs? 65 basis points, which is pretty high. We've not had
0.65%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's expensive.
It's a lot. That's a lot. That's way more than our favorite funds that we discuss all the time here on the show. We've not had great things to say about ESG funds either, which are pushing people kind of in the other direction. But it's our belief that your politics should influence who you vote for and what causes you give to. But it shouldn't have an influence on how you invest your money. We would say put on the political blindfold and invest in index funds in a world that's kind of supercharged by politics, Matt. This is one place where we should draw a line in the sand.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm with you as far as it's just an overgeneralization to say that anybody who uses the word y'all is going to be like, oh, yeah, this is totally something I want to invest in. Like, as someone who is born and raised in Georgia, I have so many friends who would be offended were somebody to assume that they are some sort of ultra right-leaning, like, Trump supporter,
yeah.
You know?
No, and Georgia is kind of one of those purple states. We're somewhere right in the middle in a whole lot of ways. And so to use this as
it offends me because, like you, we use y'all a decent bit.
Quite a bit.
And so on a related note, it's tough to watch companies trying to cash in on this polarization that's happening in the country because they are only increasing the divide between the two parties. And the journal, they actually had an article about how an anti-woke bank appears to be biting the dust. This bank was called, it's even cringe to just even say it, man, but it was called Glorify, FI, like financially independent or finance. But this was an attempt to target a right-leaning audience that transfer basically all of their banking dollars their way in an effort to supposedly align their banking relationships with their values. But as the journal documents, it's not doing so well. Investors are pulling out and it went bankrupt in a few short months. The reason we share this and we're touching on these stories is because we think the moral here is that it's better to not care about the political leanings like of the CEO of every single company that you do business with. If you were to try to do that, it's going to become too exhausting. Instead, we want you to prioritize the interest rate, first of all, but then look to some of the other softer, you know, things to consider when it comes to a bank, like the customer service, the user interface, some of the other offerings that they are making available to their customers. Just bottom line, attempting to align every money decision with your political leanings, we think that that's a fool's errand.
Yeah, so hopefully we're able to touch on politics without getting too political. It's just
sort of neutral way.
Again, everything is, we're politicizing everything, it feels like, around us in this country. The more we do it, the more toxic the discussion gets, the discourse gets, and we would like to see politics taken out of some of these things. And yet it feels like every area of our lives, including our money, people are trying to say, oh, they're trying to woo you with their political stance to come over and invest or bank there, when the reality is it might not be best for your personal finances. It might not be best for your savings and investments.
That's right.
And typically it's not. All right, last story, Matt. Let's talk about streaming for just a second. You and I, we've been hearing rumors about an ad-supported tier of Netflix coming soon. Well, they announced the details just yesterday.
It's going to be free, right?
That would be nice. But no, basically, it's going to cost $6.99 a month, and you can expect to sit through roughly 5 minutes of ads an hour to be able to keep those extra couple bucks in your pocket. I think it's $3 less than the other basic tier that's without ads. So the question is it worth it to save that extra money in order to be forced to sit through ads before and during your favorite shows? We would say that's really up to you, but I'm so glad.
It's a personal decision.
It is.
Just like the politics thing we just talked about.
Right, yes. But some folks are going to be thrilled to save $3 a month. Other people are like, there's no way. I hate ads. I'm not going to do it. But at least folks have the option now. I like that you can choose which one you want, because I know ads can be annoying, but they also allow us to get a whole lot of content that we love for free for less money.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So for you, are you going to be willing to save a few bucks and just zone out when the ads come on? If you're forced to watch a Tide commercial or something?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure yet. I have to think about it. My guess is I'll probably stick with the... I'm not a Netflix subscriber right now, so I don't have to make that decision.
Same here. I am not either. But when the time comes, I do not think I'm going to be willing to. And because it depends on how it is that they implement the commercials, right? Because back in the day when you're sitting there watching a TV show, like a lot of times they would format the shows to where there is a spot for a natural break. But if you're sitting there watching a movie and, like you said, five ads for, you know, within an hour's yeah. worth of content, that sounds terrible, man. Like imagine watching a two-hour movie and being forced to sit through 10 ads. That sounds like the worst night of my life. Like, it makes me think of some of the free services, like Pluto TV or whatever, like Crackle. And, like, I'm sitting there with the kids. We're watching Harry Potter. And then all of a sudden, an ad pops up for, like, Six Flags or something like that. It kind of, like, ruins the scene. And they're not strategically placed. Like, maybe it's in between scenes, but it just kills the vibe, the mood a little bit. Whereas with TV shows, in particular, if it's, like, a sitcom, I don't think I would mind as much if there was an ad that popped up. But if we're talking about movies, no way. Like, would you pay less to go to watch a movie in a movie theater and you're just sitting there and all of a sudden like an ad pops up?
Depends how much, because movies are at the theater are really expensive. I haven't gone in a couple years because of it, but
it just sounds terrible. I'm sure any film critic or buff, anybody who's real big into movies would also think that this is a terrible idea.
Yeah, probably, but
for different reasons.
For a lot of people though, they're going to be into it, and Netflix thinks they're going to make a lot of money doing this, and I'm just glad that people have the option.
Love it.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want the show notes, you can head to our website, catch them there at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And if you have not yet signed up for the How to Money newsletter, you need to do that. Head over to howtomoney.com/newsletter, sign up. It'll show up in your inbox every Tuesday morning, and it's going to be encouraging. It's going to be helpful, and it's like they're chock full of practical things, practical steps that you can take that are going to allow you to get ahead with your money. And not to mention, we would appreciate it were you to do that. Joel, that's going to be it for this Friday flight. We'll see you back here on Monday. We've got a fresh Ask How to Money episode for you. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And?
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Diamonds Direct has done it again. This month only, get ready for an offer you can't resist. Buy a natural diamond engagement ring of 1 carat plus and receive a free natural 1 carat diamond tennis bracelet valued at $2,000. That's right, a stunning diamond tennis bracelet at no extra cost. Imagine giving her the ring of her dreams and her wedding gift all at once. So hurry into Diamonds Direct. Your chance to get a free tennis bracelet will not last long. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.